Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Kate Atkinson. She has a new novel out. It's called Started Early, Took My Dog. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
I love the title.
Yes. I tend to have titles before I have books. I kind of search around for a book to hang on to a title. So I love titles, and I've always wanted to write a book with where the title was the first line of an Emily Dickinson poem, so I finally achieved that, I think. I wish now that all of my books had been the first lines of Emily Dickinson poems. I think they would have made more cohesive canon. But yes, she writes some really wacky first lines.
And you end the book with Dickinson, don't you?
I do, and also Jackson Brodie, the main character, develops a liking for Emily Dickinson poetry within the book, and that's entirely because I felt a certain need to not justify the title, but to make it seem more redolent in the book, because he's not really a poetry man, but all of a sudden he starts liking Emily Dickinson poetry. But I think if he was going to like any poetry, he would like Emily Dickinson. That's my reasoning.
Is this the fourth Jackson Brodie book?
It is the fourth, yes.
I read When Will There Be Good News, and mm-hmm. and then I read this one, and these books struck me as being incredibly different as far as the way that you set them up.
Well, all four books are different because I never intended to write a series, but I'd never intended to write the kind of book where the same thing is replicated, because you get very bored doing that. I wanted each one to have a different feel to it. So, the main character himself changes position in these books. In When Will There Be Good News, he's in a coma most of the time. The book's really about the female characters, I think. And in this book, he's sort of back in charge again. But they do. I'm glad that you think that those two feel different, because I like to think that they all feel different.
Very much so. He was in a train crash in the other book, wasn't he?
He is, yes.
Yeah. He's an odd man.
You think?
Yes,
think
he's a very odd duck.
Women love him, I have to say. So I'm not sure how men feel about him, but women love this character more than I do, I have to say. I'm not sure that I love him at all, but women really are attracted to Jackson. So why do you think he's an odd board?
Well, in this book, he's working on an investigation, but he's just kind of, he's a tourist.
He never really works very hard on his investigations. They sort of fall in his lap, or he bumps into things, but he very rarely, I've noticed, in all four books. I think in the first book he sets out to find things, because he's actually working as a private detective, so that is his job. But in subsequent books, it's more that things happen to him, and he very rarely himself solves things. I think it's other characters who solve things. He's usually left relatively puzzled by things. And in this book, well, he does find what he's looking for, but he goes about it in a rather ramshackle way, I think.
You mentioned that women love Jackson Brodie, and that reminded me of a comment that was made on this program recently. I was interviewing Ian Rankin, and he was talking about how women write male characters with great ease in this particular type of novel, and yet men have a very hard time writing women characters. What do you think about that observation?
I think women think about characters in their lives, not in fiction. I think women think a lot more about the psychological makeup of other people, I think, than men do. And that's not that's not a bad thing about men. It's just the way women are much more into the social networking and how people work, I think. Maybe because they raise children more, more closely. But I do have to think more about male characters, because I'm very conscious I don't really know what it's like to be inside a man's head, whereas I just have this incredibly glib presumption that I know how every woman thinks, from, a 6-year-old to a 90-year-old, that because I'm a woman, I understand, which is probably very false. But I think with men, although since I've had a grandson, I feel I understand men better now that I've seen, how they grow up. But women, they're a lot of the really violent crime writers are women. Women really, like to go for all the serial killers and the gore, and they do. Yeah, they do. I haven't really thought about the detective genre in women. and their male characters, but they do seem to like their male characters. There's not that, you know, women do tend to be victims within the crime genre, I think, rather than, you know, the proactive characters.
Hmm. Kate Atkinson joins us. Her new novel is Started Early, Took My Dog. It's the fourth novel with Jackson Brody as an investigator. She joins us by telephone from Boston, where she's on a bit of a little book tour of the U.S., and I'm sure our listeners are picking up a little bit of an accent. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you came to this profession.
I'm from York, which is in Yorkshire, in North Yorkshire, and I've lived in Edinburgh. I've lived in Scotland most of my adult life. I've lived in Edinburgh now for 16 years, although I miss Yorkshire a lot, which I think shows in these books because Jackson's also from Yorkshire, and I think I'm using him in a way to get back there. There's a certain nostalgia in his character as well as mine, I think, for my home county, because Yorkshire, I don't know, but Yorkshire's, you know, the Texas of England. We're hugely proud of our county, and because it is the biggest and the best, of course. I went to university in Scotland. That's how I arrived here to begin with. And after I graduated, I did a doctorate that I famously failed at the oral examination. Then I went on to what I now see was I put together the CV of a writer, because I worked in all kinds of different jobs, from cleaning to lecturing to being a legal secretary to working with the elderly. So I did a lot of different things because I was slightly irresponsible because I was a single parent with two daughters, but I never felt that I could follow a career path or really, you know, do something. I never did anything for more than a year because I always used to think, oh, well, I've done that now, what's next, rather than thinking of it in terms of actually, and you know, a career. So I won a women's magazine short story competition in the 80s, which is how I started writing. I started writing for women's magazines, which I used to enjoy. Actually, that was just at the tail end of women's magazines in the UK running short fiction. And after that, really, things changed and they became more celebrity-oriented, more puzzle and game-oriented, and there's very little fiction now in magazines. So, and then I won another story competition, which was, you know, in inverted commas, a literary story competition, and I got an agent, and she said, do you have a novel in your drawer? People always talk about novels in the drawer. I find that's very curious that people keep their novels in drawers. And I said, well, I've got 3-4 chapters, which I'd thought about for a long time, but hadn't really written, and she auctioned them off, and I'd gone from kind of struggling, penniless writer, stroke anything else that came along, to suddenly finding myself with a 2-book deal, and people actually expecting me to finish writing that novel, and that was behind the scenes at the museum, which won the Whitbread Prize. And I think when you win a big prize straight out of the gate like that, it really just propels you forward. You know, I didn't build up from novel to novel, acquiring a readership. I kind of started at the top, which I think I was very fortunate in doing, and I've been writing ever since. And that's it in a nutshell.
I love it. Kate Atkinson joins us. Her new book is Started Early, Took My Dog. I never read reviews of books until after I've read the book myself.
I never read reviews at all.
Well, good for you. So you probably haven't read the new review of your book in Time magazine.
Well, actually, surprisingly, I have, because it was thrust into my hand and I couldn't avoid it. You can't avoid reviews. Even if you say to everyone in your life, you know, professional and personal, I don't want to see reviews. I cannot tell you the number of times people have said to me, I know you don't want to read reviews, but... And a very good friend gave me the Time review, and I happened to know that it was a good one. And I tell you why. Well, I don't like reviews, and probably this is why most writers don't like reviews. That people will say it's an incredibly good review in so and so, you know, and you think, okay, it's incredibly good. I can read it. I won't be hurt and offended. And there's always a but, and the but is the only thing that you're interested in. It's a wonderful novel, but you think, no, I hate that but. There isn't really a but in the Time review. Tiny, tiny one, I think, near the end. But
I have a butt in the Time review.
You have a butt.
I read it, and I said, you know, this is a good review, but they left out my favorite character. They never mentioned my favorite character, the dog.
Well, my favorite, too.
I love the dog.
Yeah, I was going to have the dog as a, not as a speaking character, because that would have been wrong in a realistic novel. But I was going to, he was going to be one of the characters in that we had access to how the dog was thinking, and I did really like that. But then I thought it doesn't quite fit with the rest of the book, but it came out near the end because I actually have a bit where the dog speaks to Jackson. I so needed the dog to speak.
I remember that part.
I'd like that dog because I don't have a dog. I would like a dog very much, and I'd like that dog particularly, I think.
I love the dog a lot.
I'm very pleased to hear that.
And Jackson, I think, is getting a little bit attached to the dog, too.
I think I'm having this dilemma because the book I'm writing at the moment isn't a Jackson Brodie book. It's a completely different book, but he's not dead. He's coming back, you know, maybe the book after. And I just don't know whether he should keep the dog or not.
I vote for the dog, but can we give our listeners some sense of what this book is about? It's pretty complex.
It's, well, as I said, I bring him back to Yorkshire, so he's not as aimless as he's been in the last two books. He has a purpose. He's looking for, he's been contacted by a woman in New Zealand who was adopted and then emigrated, and who's trying to find her birth parents. Because she now has children and she wants, you know, to find out if there's any genetics there, or she just wants to connect with this past that she's never known because she was adopted as a baby. And he thinks this is a very straightforward task because it's the kind of thing he does as a private detective, although he's not really officially working as a private detective anymore. And so he goes looking for certificates and the officialities of the adopted, and he discovers that there's nothing. There's no sign that this woman ever existed before she was adopted, that there are no adoption papers, no birth certificates, no sign of any natural parents. And so he's come north to investigate this absence further, and that's what's brought him to Leeds. At the same time, there is an ex-policewoman, Tracy, who's taken a job as head of security, rather run-down shopping mall. And Tracy and Jackson are a sort of the twin backbones of the book because they mirror each other a lot. They're both retired police. They're both from the north. They're both, you know, they're kind of long in the tooth. They've had lots of experience. They both end up having to care for something that they didn't expect to have to care for. And we have some scenes in the past with Tracy, and it very slowly develops that the background information that Jackson is looking for to do with this woman in New Zealand, Hope McMaster, is actually very tied into experiences that Tracy has had in the past in Leeds, and that these two stories are actually linked, although on the surface there is no linkage whatsoever between Tracy and Jackson. So it slowly evolves that all of the characters in the book are linked, including Tilly, who is an aging actress whose mind is going, who is a sort of sidebar character in that she doesn't seem to have anything to do with the plot or the other two characters, but in the end is actually has a very important part to play. So it sounds probably more complicated than it is, or maybe it sounds less complicated than it is, I'm not sure. But that's really the structure of the book, I think.
I think the most complicated thing for me as an interviewer would be to describe it as well as you just did without giving away the good stuff.
Yes. I'm not really very good at describing my own book, so, but there are some things I know that you mustn't say.
Well, when you talked about the two of them being linked by protecting or taking care of something, that was good. That was there was a certain amount of ambiguity there, but you're right. That is a great linkage. And also, it's a story of missing children.
Yes, it is. It is a story of missing children, although I don't know if that was my intention to make that so much the focus of it, but it seemed to become that more and more as I was writing it, because it did just start off with the one child, well, the one grown-up who didn't know who she was as a child. But I think once you have a theme up and running, it attracts sort of the similar things, I think. I probably have lost count of the children in this book. But it's a book about losing something, but it's also very much a book about finding something, I think. I think there's a sort of equal balance there. But there is also a great deal of ambiguity in the end, I think, because my instinct is always to tie everything up very tightly with very tight knots so that everything's finished. But as a writer, I've learned that that's not really what I want to do, so that there are some very untied up bits at the end of this book, and I think it's both aggravates readers to have ambiguity in which things are not solved. At the same time, they like it. And I often get that. So I got that with When Will There Be Good News. People always say to me, well, I can't, without revealing that entire book, but, you know, how did he get the gun is a question. I'm frequently asked at the end of When Will There Be Good News, and I have to say, I don't know, because I didn't write that part of it. I've left that completely open. I don't know how he got the gun, and we can all presume our own story of how he got the gun. So with this, it's, you know, what happens to Courtney at the end of this book. Courtney's a child in the book, and I'm always asked this question, and there's whole blogs out there on the internet saying, you know, who is Courtney? What happens to her? And I can honestly say, I don't know. I don't know who she is, and I don't know what happens to her. So I think it's interesting for both reader and writer to have the same ambiguity. Or maybe you don't think so. Maybe you think I should tie things up more.
I get incredibly annoyed at the end of a book when everything gets neatly tied up.
Yeah.
That just bugs me, because it doesn't work that way in life.
No, exactly. And I think that's why it's important to leave those things, you know, loose and frayed.
Because life is full of loose ends.
Mm,
you can never tie them up.
It's only when you die, really, that's the thing that ties everything up, I think.
In a way.
In a way.
Yes. Kate Atkinson joins us. Her new novel is Started Early, Took My Dog, and she's on book tour in the U.S. What is it, five cities?
Yes, five cities. So New York yesterday, Boston today, Houston tomorrow, San Francisco for two nights, and then Seattle and straight home. I hardly see Seattle. I'm in and out so fast. Yeah.
That is a whirlwind.
Well, it's best to do it fast in a way, because otherwise you end up having long empty hours in hotel rooms, really. You know, best to keep going and push through, I think. Part of me hates it and part of me quite enjoys it in a kind of an evil, masochistic way.
Well, you get to talk to people like me that you can't even see.
I know. And you do a lot of phone interviews, and they're quite frustrating because it's very odd to talk to people you can't see.
The visual cues are definitely valuable.
Yes, they are.
Because you don't interrupt the other person as much.
No. Yeah. No. And you don't get all those encouraging looks when you start to dry up because you forgot what you're saying.
Do you do a lot of interviews? Or?
I do less and less because I think, you know, certainly in the UK, I think marketing sells a book. I think marketing sells all books, really, doesn't it? Unless you've got one of those very rare word of mouth phenomenons. So I think actually doing interviews and events is sort of the icing on the cake in a way that might not be necessary, because you maybe get the cake without the icing anyway. And no, I can't run with that metaphor any further. But I don't do interviews now in the UK, because the British press, they have an agenda and they're always looking for a story. It's never really about the book, I think, because we don't have a great press in many ways. And even the, you know, those broadsheets that have good reputations, they're always looking to write about you rather than to write about the book, I think. But also, I just don't think that they sell the book anymore in the UK. I think I'm in this very fortunate position where I can actually say I don't need to do publicity in the UK, which is great. But yeah, everywhere else in the world, I think you still have to be, you know, promoting yourself so that people learn more about you, learn more about the books.
So you're saying in the UK it's more of a tabloid, sensationalist type of coverage that they're looking for?
I think, you know, a publicist will always say to you, this interview is about the book. It's definitely about the book. It's for the literary pages. It's about the book. And you go, okay, I'll believe you. But I think all publicists should have tattooed on their foreheads, it's never about the book. Because they want more. They want to write about, you know, what you're wearing and what your hair's like and, you know, your relationship with your children. They always go beyond that. And I just think that's really not appropriate a lot of the time, because those are different interviews. Those are personal interviews. And I wouldn't do a personal interview because I think you have to keep some separation between, you know, you have to keep your privacy, uh-huh. I think it's important, because if you sell yourself as a person, it's so much more difficult to write, I think.
So what are you wearing? I'm just kidding.
I'm wearing Uggs.
I'm just kidding. I honestly don't know anything except your book, so I don't know anything about your personal life.
But in a way, I think that's good, don't you? Because you come to a book as a book. I don't think you come to a book because you're looking for the author. In fact, you don't want the author in a book.
I agree. Totally. Even though I do like talking about, like with Ian Rankin, I love talking about music because I know he's a music nut.
That's right, yeah.
And so if you had some really interesting hobby that I knew about, if I knew that you collected old bullets from the battlefield or something like that, and I was interested in it, I would talk about that. But I don't know anything about your hobbies or anything.
I like steam trains.
Oh, wow. I
do,
too.
If that's any help to you.
I love steam trains. You don't see them much anymore.
No. In Britain, there's a group of incredible enthusiasts who have built a new steam engine. It's the first that's been built in Britain since the war, I think. So it's a proper mainline, proper engine that now runs and does, you know, excursions, things. But it gets to run at full speed on the main line, which is none of these other railway preservation systems. You know, do that. They run on preservation lines and they have to go quite slowly. So I actually had a footplate ride on it in the summer, and it was just about the most exciting thing I've ever done, because 80 miles an hour when you're sitting in the carriage of a train isn't very fast. You know, you're on a train journey, you don't even think, oh, this is 80 miles an hour. 80 miles an hour up front on the footplate is fast, very, very fast. So very exciting. So there you go.
How fun. Well, we found out something about Kate Atkinson that will be on page 3 tomorrow. Started Early, Took My Dog is her new novel. You indicated earlier that you're writing another book. It's a standalone?
Yes. Well, no. I have two companion books, but they are each completely standalone. But I'd like to think that they, if you read both of them, then the experience would be richer. And I'm not writing them back to back. I'm writing one, and then I'm probably going to write maybe something with Jackson, and then I'll write the second one. And they're both about the war. They're not entirely set during the war, but they are. Their main focus is the war.
Which war?
The Second World War.
Okay.
So that the first book is a smaller book in scope, and the second one is a bigger one, but they are related. It's been a kind of relief to write something so different, because it's, I think, behind the scenes content was partly historical fiction, my first book, but I haven't really written historical fiction since then, and it's been quite liberating somehow to go back. I'm still in 1926 and I'm on about page 200, so whether I'm actually going to get to the war, I don't know, but I was born in 1951, so I've always felt that I just missed the war, so it's always been a really fascinating topic to me. So I'm enjoying writing. I don't often say I'm enjoying writing something, because I often find writing very hard. But so far I've been, you know, really relaxed writing this book. I think it's taken me forever, though, so Who knows when it'll be finished.
I am very fond of a lot of historical fiction, and I had the pleasure a number of years ago of interviewing a writer from Edinburgh who wrote historical fiction, Dorothy Dunnett.
Oh, yes, Dorothy Dunnett. Yes.
She was amazing.
Yes.
And she said, I'm in the phone book. If you're ever in Edinburgh,
oh, really?
Give me a call. And she said, and I'm up late.
Uh-huh.
Of course, now she's passed on. So
she has. Her husband was a writer, wasn't he? I seem to remember.
I don't know much about him. Was he a painter, too? Or was she the painter?
There was some famous connection, but I can't remember what it was. Yes, she's a very good writer.
What is it with Edinburgh? You seem to have a lot of very well-known novelists in town.
Yes, we don't socialize. There is no literary scene in Edinburgh in the way that, you know, London has a literary scene, because people go to, you know, the parties and the events and the dues and so on and so forth. But in Edinburgh, it's not like that. Although, you know, Ian and Alexander McCall Smith and J.K. Rowling all live in incredibly close to each other in the same neighborhood and in Merkeston in Edinburgh. And people often presume, for some reason, that I also will live in Merkeston, and I always go, no, actually, I live in the Grange, because the Grange is slightly snootier than Merkeston. So I feel I've set myself apart. I don't know why. I suppose it's, you know, it's a UNESCO city of literature, and it's always, I think, prided itself on its literary connections, but it just happenstance, I suppose.
Well, when I talked to Ian Rankin the other day, he seemed a little miffed that there'd actually been a murder in his neighborhood and he wasn't around.
I know there was a grisly murder in Merkeston Avenue, and I was thinking, oh, I wonder if Ian's taking notice of this.
He was in Houston. He was disappointed.
Oh, There's a couple of big policemen live in that street as well, so maybe.
Big policemen, like officials? Like,
yeah, top policemen. Mm. Yes, there was, yes. I was following that with great interest.
So do they have a suspect?
They hadn't arrested anyone when I left. Mm.
Kate Atkinson joins us. Her new novel is Started Early, Took My Dog. This is also a story about secrets and history, particularly among social workers and police officers.
Mm.
There's a lot of mystery there, and we're trying to figure out who done it in so many different ways, because you have all these different people that could have done something wrong.
Mm.
And we're trying to figure out who it could have been. And you have this scene, which I won't describe, where they, at a public event, they arrest this poor fellow. And I love that. I love the timing of that.
Yes, it was justice being done very, very late, I suppose. But, you know, we said we don't like tying ends up in books. But I think, for me, it's very important to see justice done, that, you know, because Jackson's a very righteous character, and I often have very righteous characters in my books, and I feel that there has to be a sense that somehow, on the whole, the good are punished. No, that's wrong, isn't it? Yes, that betrays my terribly ambiguous ethics, that the bad are punished and the good are rewarded. And that doesn't necessarily mean that people who've done illegal deeds are punished, but I think just that sense of right and wrong is very strong. And I mean, I was an avid reader very early on as a child, but I read fairy stories a lot. I mean, I really read and reread and reread fairy stories. And they gave me this kind of pattern of the world where, you know, the good win and the bad are punished and cosmic justice reigns, and that in the end, right will be done. And, you know, real right justice will come to the fore. And I think I feel that very strongly as a fictional archetype, and that I think it's important that people who've done evil things in my books are brought to book somehow or other.
That's been a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Mm, pleasure to talk to you.
I've always wanted to interview you.
Have you?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
We did it.
I hope I wasn't a disappointment.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kate Atkinson has been our guest. Her new novel is Started Early, Took My Dog. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks for listening. Tune in to the program next week when my guest will be the legendary journalist Jimmy Breslin. Breslin has written a biography of the man who broke the color line in Major League Baseball by bringing Jackie Robinson to the Brooklyn Dodgers. It happened back in the 1940s. His name was Branch Rickey. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.